your chronological age.
I'm sorry, that is so funny. That is honestly the funniest thing. You're very funny. So I've laughed a lot at your stuff, but that is the funniest thing I've ever heard come out of anyone's mouth.
Hello.
How old are you? How old is your body? And what do you do to feel young?
I'm Katherine Ryan, and these are the questions we'll be asking on this podcast, What's My Age Again? This week, my guest is the brilliant writer Bryony Gordon. Bryony's always been open about everything, her struggles with depression, her eating disorder, and her cocaine and alcohol addiction. She's also written about her weight and how running has helped her in recent years to overcome her mental health challenges. Bryony is 44, and like everyone on this podcast, she has taken a biological age test to find out how her body's age compares to her chronological age. Will the years of addiction have taken their toll, or maybe pickled her beautifully? Bryony Gordon, are you ready to find out your biological age? Your result is... We will reveal the details later on in the pod, and as always, we'll be joined by Dr. Nicola Conlon, our resident scientist, to interpret those results. Bryony Gordon, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
To What's My Age Again? How are you feeling about such an invasive ask from a podcast?
I mean, it's kind of like invasive is my bread and butter, you know? So I'm really, interested, but also a little bit terrified. I feel like everyone, all of the crew and stuff, are sitting around knowing that I'm, you know, a little, that it, my body is like a little old lady's.
Is that how you feel it's going to go?
I don't know.
Were you just waiting all this time? When's someone going to ask me for my actual blood?
My biology. Yeah, this is the next frontier. This is like crossing the next frontier.
Because you've given everything.
I've given everything other than my blood. But for you, Katherine, you can have my blood. And I'm excited. Well, also, I don't really, you know, I can find out what my biological age is, but I feel quite good about myself as a person now. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really, you know.
But I know what you're saying. You're feeling yourself in the metaphorical sense.
So I don't. So I'm not too worried.
No.
Okay. So here's the truth. Mm-hmm. I feel quite lucky to be alive. So I got sober nearly 8 years ago, and I feel genuinely that every day since has been a bit of a bonus, because I should really be dead.
You were that in.
I was that into drinking and drugging that I look back at some of my behavior and some of the kind of places I ended up, and it's like, ooh, you know, I'm lucky to be alive. I genuinely feel very lucky to be alive. And I kind of see aging as a privilege as well, because I've lost a couple of friends in their early 40s. And that has really shown me that it's, you know, without sounding like a sort of Instagram inspirational quote or whatever, it's, life is really precious. It's like all we have is right now.
You're absolutely right. And I think not everyone gets that. And you and I think, I hope you don't mind me saying so, we do have similarities. And my outlook is exactly the same. I think people are stressed. People are worried about this and that. And I just feel like I wake up like a dog every day, just like, oh my gosh, it's all still here.
That is genuinely how I feel. I wake up in sort of terror, but excitement. Like, oh my God, you've got to do another day, Bryony. You're awful. You can't do it. Stay in bed. Aww. But then I kind of hack that part of my brain and go, no, what a privilege. What a joy. You know, I lost a really dear friend last year, Katherine, and was there as they died, and of cancer. And it was just horrific to see someone in their early 40s, just who was like a massive part of my life and my family's life. And they were kind of vital and there, and then they weren't.
Yeah.
And I was my best friend's husband, and have been very much like part supporting her since. And it really, you know, like if there are any sort of lessons from it, and I, you know, there's a part of me that's like, oh, there aren't any lessons. It's just shit, you know, but it is like, I am not going to sit around whinging about getting old.
No,
I'm just not, because it's just fucking offensive to all those people that don't get to get old.
And that's what my mother says. She goes, but she's got a kind of a more cynical view about it. But she goes, well, it's better than the alternative.
Well, it is.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
And my mother has a huge issue with getting old.
So does mine.
Yeah.
My mom, when I turned 27, which let me tell you, well, you know, it was quite some time ago, she was like, you're going to have to start lying about your age, Bryony.
Yeah.
Because I can't have a child over 27.
Oh.
And my grandmother, she, like, we never knew her true age until she died. And it turned out that she was older than my grandfather, which was obviously like this
scandal,
this like huge kind of shame. I mean, only by about 2 years or something. But
the Demi Moore of the 60s.
Yeah, she was called Demi as well. Weird. And my mama has just always, you know, put some makeup on, wear night cream from like the age of 12 mm-hmm. or something. And she is very glamorous. Like, she probably looks younger than me, but if you ask her her age, she just is like, how dare you?
Yeah.
I do think a lot of the work I do now is really a reaction mm-hmm. and sort of to growing up and seeing my mum and her friends sort of clinging onto a can of Diet Coke.
When do you feel like you became an adult? Is it when you got sober, or did you have some moments before?
I don't think I had any moments before. I definitely, even having my daughter at like 32, I thought I was a child. I thought I was a child myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I really was like, they're going to let me take this child home from hospital.
Same. A 32-year-old teen mom? Me? Yeah.
Still,
I've got so much to do.
And I definitely, when I got sober, so I got sober when my daughter was 4, thank God. And I still have moments now where I open the fridge and I'm like, oh my God, there's food in there.
Yeah.
Or I get up and I'm like, wow, I'm not hungover or still drunk. Or I, you know, like I get up at like 7 on a Saturday morning and I'll go for a run. And I'm like, my God, I kind of want to stop everyone I pass on the common and go, look what a grown up I am. But that would be a bit weird.
So you feel like maybe you've not reached adulthood?
I think I'm firmly like 8.
That's great.
So I feel like I am the age of how sober I am.
Oh.
Yeah.
So your life really began 8 years ago and you have clarity and now you're running and doing all these things. You must have had a very, I don't know whether to call him a supportive or enabling husband.
He's a supportive.
So he must have met you in the throes of all of this.
He was, but,
addiction.
You know, I think it was also like before I had my daughter, I think my addiction could have realistically just looked like partying mm-hmm. and having a good time, you know, like journalist, you know, we're out, media.
Because in your first book, it just sounds like a lot of fun.
And a lot of it was. You know?
Yeah. Is cocaine just secretly lots of fun?
Well, I don't
think people seem to love it.
It's it was like, I think for me, it was just, it enabled me to carry on drinking. When I got sober, I was like, I don't want to be an alcoholic. I'm going to be an addict. You know, I'm a coke addict. And I realized about a year and a half into the whole fandango of being sober that the only reason I took drugs was so I could continue to drink. And I was like, you're just a common or garden alcoholic, Bryony. That's all you are, you know.
Just a resourceful one.
Yeah. And all coke did was enable me to carry on drinking, like sobers you up. But then it also had sort of like terrible, seedy, you know, like people do seedy shit on coke.
Can you tell me something as someone who's never taken cocaine? And I'm not
really
saying that I'm better than you. I'm going to do drugs one day. Like MDMA, I think, on my 70th birthday, if I live that long.
Okay.
I've never taken any drugs.
None at all?
Ever, no. No one's offered. I asked someone, why does no one offer it? Not that I want it. So do I look square? And they go, no, you look like you've got your own.
Yeah.
Oh. But I can't figure this out with one of my girlfriends, and I know that you're going to tell me the truth.
Okay.
So her husband disappeared one evening, a night of drinking. He didn't come home. She had a small baby. She didn't know where he was. He rocks up in the morning. She checks his phone. He had been to see a sex worker at 3:30 a.m. The party ended, and he texted a sex worker being like, are you free to meet up? And then he remained there from 3:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. and eventually went home with his tail between his legs. And the wife was like, oh, my gosh, you went to a sex worker? And he goes, you don't understand. Sex workers have cocaine. I had done some cocaine at the party. I just wanted more cocaine. I wasn't having sex. That's not what I'm addicted to. I wanted to get cocaine. Is that one of the seedy things that might happen in the pursuit of cocaine?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you wouldn't care what people do, like, for a living or whatever. But no, what people go to sex workers to get as drug dealers.
Because they're also drug dealers.
I don't know. I think people might go to sex workers because they're on drugs.
Okay, so you never went to a sex worker to get more drugs?
No.
I'm going to tell her that.
No. I don't. I mean, like, I feel bad for your friend.
Me too.
He's probably, like, why wouldn't you just call your drug dealer?
I don't know that he...
Like, is his drug dealer in bed? No.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, no, this is like, just come home with your tail between your legs.
Yeah.
And accept that the cocaine made you really horny, and that's why you called the sex worker.
Does cocaine make you horny?
Yes.
Can you have sex at 3:30 in the morning?
I can't.
I mean, I gotta get on cocaine.
No, now I wouldn't. You know, like, it's having sex at 3:30 in the afternoon is like, do I really want to do that?
No,
but
I don't.
It does definitely make you do some seedy shit.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we could clear that up today.
But I'm
I just thought I'd take the opportunity. I've never known anyone who could tell me these things. And I said, if I meet someone...
No, I mean, like, it's definitely not, like, a way I got drugs.
Fine.
Yeah.
But you did some seedy things. You didn't like it. What inspired you to finally get sober?
I don't know. It was... Well, I'll tell you what it was. It was that if I didn't get sober, I was going to die.
You really believe you were going to die?
Yeah, definitely. I was like, I'm either going to die by choosing to take my own life.
Oh.
Because it had got to the stage where I was almost fantasizing about the ways that I could, like, almost die, because then people might see what pain I was in and that I needed help. There were also times where I would just be in so much shame that it wasn't that I wanted to die. It was just that I knew that if I was dead, I didn't have to feel the shame, which was horrible. So I knew that that was either one way that it was going to happen, or it was going to happen because I choked on my own vomit, or I fell down some stairs or something. You know, like, all of those you hear about people that sort of just, you know, they fall in a canal or something drunkenly. Or kind of almost worst of all, I was going to die because by kind of continuing to live in this, like, Groundhog Day existence, mm-hmm. where every day I woke up and I was like, oh, never again, never again, never again. And then it would get to like 4 p.m. and I was like, okay, I need to drink again. And I just couldn't do it. It was like, I couldn't, there's like that jumping off point, I think, for most people that get sober, where it was like, I don't want to continue drinking like this, but I don't want to stop either. I don't know how to. I don't know what is my alternative. And it felt like my life was over. It felt like my life was over. Like, the shame of everything, the way I'd behaved. And also because I couldn't see how you could live in the world without alcohol.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, drugs. But, you know, really, without alcohol.
And so it's cyclical.
Yeah, so it was kind of terrifying. But really, that's when my life began, you know. That's when life as it should in glorious Technicolor. Like, that was the bit in The Wizard of Oz where it turns from black and white to full glorious Technicolor. You know, sometimes you're like, oh my God, I don't want to see that. Because it's kind of, it was like all of the stuff that I had hidden under the rug, you know, I was like, let's just, the rug was getting bigger and bigger and more unshapely under my feet, you know, mm-hmm. with all this shit that I was trying to hide under it. And they pulled up the rug and it was like, now you're going to have to look at this, girl.
And that's hard.
That's hard, yeah.
And you've really turned a corner. So you're running now. You're super healthy now.
But here's the thing. As an addict, as an alcoholic, is that those positive milestones wouldn't stop me.
Oh, okay.
So I would have positive milestones, mm-hmm. but I would still go out and drink. And then it was kind of miraculous that I managed to cross the finish line in one piece, because I remember...
Drinking?
I didn't drink while I was running the actual marathon.
I would have been really impressed there.
But I would go and do like a long run. And then I'd run like 13 miles and then I'd basically drink 13 pints straight like afterwards. And my husband would be like, that's not, you don't get like a pint of lager for each mile you've run. And I was like, au contraire. A year later, I did the London Marathon again, sober. So I'd got sober a couple of months after running my first marathon. Mm-hmm. And I had thought, this is going to be so much easier because I'm sober, I'm healthier. And it was 100 times harder than the year before. And that was because I realized that was the power of alcohol for me. Like, I ran that whole marathon for the bender at the end of it.
Toward the pints.
Yeah. I was like, that's my medal. That's my reward. So when that was taken away from me, I was like, well, what was I running towards? I was running towards my bed and a burger, which was like, well, but it didn't hold the same sort of dopamine delight as a bender. And I realized then that was like the power of my alcoholism. Yeah. But also, but running did what doing that training block showed me was there was a different way to live.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have to live in this perpetual cycle. I started to meet people that they did exercise and they did it because they just enjoyed it. And I started to also see that my exercise for me had always been this kind of very punishing thing. Mm-hmm. It was about making myself smaller, you know? And suddenly I was exercising for the gains and not the losses. So it was for like the clarity, the way it made me feel, as opposed to how slim I could get. And each week your body can do a little bit more than you thought it could the week before when you're training for something like that. And that was like, whoa.
Yeah, I think that's such a healthy way to approach diet and exercise.
Yeah.
Even with your food, to think inclusively rather than exclusively. Yeah. To think about benefits rather than losses. I've never heard anyone articulate it like that. But yeah, if you're trying to lose, nobody wants to lose.
No. So it's like you've got to be in it for the way it makes you feel, not the way it makes you look. And that was a real turning point for me. And it was really kind of self-esteem boosting, I guess.
And in terms of the test, do you think that all those years of alcohol and drug abuse will have impacted your biological age or your health like permanently? Or do you feel like you have the genetics that you can totally bounce back? Because I feel like maybe you have the genetics that you can totally bounce back.
I don't know. I did some pretty dark things to my body, Catherine.
Yeah, but look at you now. I mean, some people can. My granddad could drink 40 ounces of Crown Royal every day. And we talk about him like that was a mark of honor. I couldn't. I'd be in the hospital. I have 3 white wines, I'd be in the hospital.
Yeah, but now
I don't have what it takes, Bryony.
This is the thing, is that now I've gone from being like a pharmaceutical dustbin to like now if I have a Chinese takeaway, I feel hungover the next day. So my tolerance is completely gone.
Okay.
So I imagine I'm about 88 biologically. That would be my like highly scientific guess.
Analysis. And do you think that would be because of the drinking and drugs exclusively?
Yeah, like this, I only gave up smoking like 2 years ago.
Because you're not a stressful person. I think that because you've written a column all of your working life and been very open and totally transparent, kind of the way I am. Do you think that that is a less stressful way to live your life?
But I am stressed. I find stress, like I find life quite stressful.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. And also, so the other thing about this biological age thing is that, I think, you know, I love running, all of that kind of stuff. I'm sober. But I will only give something up if you tell me that I'm going to die in 20 seconds from it. So I had a couple of years ago, I kept having these palpitations and I ended up being like rushed to hospital and they were like, you've got an arrhythmia, atrial fibrillation. Like, can you give up cigarettes? And I was like, oh, I know enough about addiction that if I don't, the only way I'm going to give it up is dropping dead. So like, I have to have something wrenched from my hands, you know.
Should we talk about your family?
We can, yeah.
Good, because your mother is Jane Gordon, also a well-known writer. Have you learned any positive things from her about aging? It sounds like she's not a fan.
I mean, no. She's incredibly beautiful and glamorous, and I look like I've eaten two of my mum kind of thing.
No, stop. But,
no,
this
no,
is what
that's
we do.
Fine. No, it's not, but it's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's like, so we're quite different in that respect.
And I think you can be that way with a mother like you describe yours, because my mother sounds very much the same. And I think she taught me by example, but how not to be, the opposite of what to do. And I think she was mindful of that. As much as she would deprive herself and really felt self-conscious about aging. I think she was somewhere along the line. I must have got the message, and you must have got the message to be stronger, to be articulate, to be funny.
I think that, yeah, she always told me I could do, mm-hmm. you know, she's always told me, like, you know, when I was a kid, she was like, you can do whatever you want and you're strong and you're funny and all of those things. But I think, I don't know, I just, as I've got older, Catherine, I felt this real sense of anger that women like have spend so much time hating on themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, it really pisses me off.
Don't be angry. Don't show anger. Really, just be cute.
Yeah. And it really, I think also, you know, a lot of my early years, I felt quite sexualized, you know, big boobs or whatever. Mm. And I colluded with that to a certain extent, you know. And I think I got to my 30s and I had my daughter and I was a bit like, whoa, look at what my body can do. I'm not going to spend another moment of this one precious life like hating on my body, mm-hmm. because it's not a size 8 or it's not this, or, you know, there's cellulite on it. And so for me, sort of getting, you know, bigger or allowing myself to be a size 18 or 20, you know, like, it's, you know, it fluctuates, whatever, like bodies change, they're meant to. Mm-hmm. But for me, that was very much a sort of protest, like, yeah. Fuck you. I'm just not going to waste my life hating on myself.
Yeah. And I love that we talk about body positivity now, especially you and I having daughters the age that they are. And I think it's so transformative for so many people to see their health and their life through a different lens than our mothers did. But it is relevant, I suppose, to the test. Do you think that you were unhealthy when you were larger? Do you think any size has any role in biological age or in inflammation or health that way?
I'm sure it does. But I always say this is like, you can't hate yourself to happiness or to health, right? Yeah. So for me, body positivity is like, it's not so much, oh, it's really good to be fat or it's really mm-hmm. good to be this. It's saying it's good to just accept who you are, whatever stage you are and whatever way your body is presenting itself, because that's just how it is, you know. And it's like, you deserve to still be seen, whether you're, you know, whether I weigh 5 stone more than I do right, you know, now, or 5 stone less or whatever, mm. you know, like, I deserve to exist in this body. So that for me is what body positivity is. And for me, it's like, I think that sometimes, definitely for me, putting on weight was like a bit of a protective thing.
And it's political.
Yeah, like mm. it really was. And, but I felt maybe over the last couple of years, I don't feel the need, you know, I've lost a bit of weight recently for various reasons, you know, nothing is, but it hasn't been a sort of concerted, intentional thing. Yeah. You know, it's just like, just because I've gone from, you know, I've had a really unhealthy relationship with food my whole life, you know, mm-hmm. in my 20s and my teens, I was kind of bulimic, you know, I was like binge, purge, starve. And then, you know, definitely in the last few years since getting sober, you know, binge eating disorder has been like a big thing for me. And I've written about that. Mm-hmm. But I found the more work I've done on myself and the more I've accepted myself for how I look, you know, warts and all, cellulite and all, the more I've come to a place where I like myself enough that now I feel like I don't binge anymore. I don't starve anymore. I don't mm-hmm. purge anymore. I just eat like a normal human.
Yeah.
So I eat 3 meals a day.
Which is so nice, yeah. isn't it? Just to be like, I feel like eating that.
Yeah. And that's what's happened, I think, because I've accepted myself at every size. Yeah. So that's where I've come to on it. And then I'm just the weight that I think I always will be, which is sort of like 14 and a half stone and, mm-hmm. you know, a size 18 or whatever. And I genuinely feel, but I feel like I've only got to that place by, like we were talking earlier about, if you go into something wanting to lose yeah. and wanting to be a different person to the one you are, mm-hmm. it's never going to succeed. And no. the only way you get better is going, okay, yeah, well, I am big or I am fat, or, but that's okay. I used to get lots of messages from people saying, you shouldn't be running at your weight. You're, you know, I worry about your joints. And I used to think, you don't give a shit
You're
about
not
my
worried.
Joints. Yeah. All you care about is the ability to be smug and sanctimonious and look down at me.
But it'll also be projection from
but
messaging.
That's the thing. Yeah. But I would say to anyone listening to this who feels mm-hmm. this sort of like shame about being obese or overweight or whatever, or larger, or whatever, you know, like who, like BMI is a crock of shit as well, mm-hmm. isn't it? But I would just say, you know, what other people think of you is none of your business, and it's yeah. not their business. And I, you know, I think it's a sort of people are projecting their own need onto people, because it's people get very obsessed about.
There's a
they get
certain,
on the high horse. Yeah.
There's a level of vitriol that is reserved yeah. for body shaming that I have never seen about anything else.
And it's really weird it's how people get weird. So concerned. And yeah. so it's all a load of bollocks. So what I would say is, yeah, so I don't have any shame, you know, like if being big has impacted my health negatively, so be it.
Do you worry that the yo-yoing might have impacted your health? Because certainly hearing you speak now, the peace with which you talk about your body now is youthful. Like that will, I think, be reflected in a test like this. Whereas if you're obsessed and micromanaging food and going back and forth and feeling bad about your body, certainly binging and having disordered eating, I think that would probably be aging in the test, though I don't know.
Of course it would, but I can't. Yeah. But again, it's like, what I can't undo it.
No. But it's better to be this way is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think that the only, I do think that we probably make ourselves really unwell yeah. with all, you know, like that. Well, no, not probably, definitely. Like, and also most people, when it comes to eating, are disordered.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't have to look at Instagram now, and it's kind of the way we've sort of, eating disorder culture has changed mm-hmm. and it's sort of, you know, like there's, it's all about sort of people obsessed with supplements and,
and
monitoring their blood sugar when they don't really need to because they're not diabetic. But, you know, there's sort of, I have to be really careful, you know, when I look at that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And here's the bottom line for me is like, am I doing something to nourish myself or to punish myself?
Yeah.
And if it's in the former camp, great. If it's in the latter camp, not so great. You know, like I could say taking all these extra supplements are to kind of, oh no, they're to nourish my body, but they're not. They're really sort of punishing it for not being, yeah. you know, because I'm not, I don't know.
And that can become an addiction cycle of itself for yeah. people. So your mom is a babe. She's going to live forever. We know that. Is your dad the kind of man I would be interested in meeting?
I mean, my dad is very funny.
Yeah.
He's like the funniest man on the planet. And he's 82, but he still skips and goes to the gym.
Oh.
And I keep telling him he needs to go to the doctor because he keeps having these like fainting spells. And he says, no, exercise is the best medication, honey bunch. Okay. And that's it, you know. So they're both quite similar in that they're quite disordered in their approach.
But also like genetically, this is looking really good for you because your parents are the blueprint of how you'll age.
I'm lucky that my family, like no one's like, we don't seem to have in my family terrible illnesses or anything.
That's good.
Everyone's sort of motored on into their 80s.
Great. That is looking good for the test.
It's well, that genetically, yeah, that they're cool. But like, yeah. I have done my level best to fuck it up.
We'll see though, because it might not have impacted it too much. Your daughter.
Yes.
Do you feel that becoming a parent, now again, this is just before you got sober and you had this technicolor lease of life, but do you feel that that's been a youthful experience for you, or do you feel as old and exhausted and always cold as I do? I'm just cold now. I'm old and cold.
I love the older my daughter gets,
yeah,
the more youthful I feel in terms of parenting, because Good. Even though I feel she talks to me like I'm a a 90-year-old person. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, mom, you're so lame. And why are you so embarrassing? But I really enjoy having an almost 12-year-old, like the conversation, mm-hmm. the kind of just also just seeing her grow into this independent woman who doesn't appear to be beset by all the self-loathing that I was mm-hmm. yet.
Maybe never.
I don't know. I
can undo ancestral trauma. I really believe that. And it sounds like every generation of the women in your family anyway have made steps in a more progressive direction. And your daughter has you. So like you've been sober most of her life. You sounded like a lot of fun before that too.
I have a propensity to like run marathons in just my underwear.
I loved that.
And like let my flab hang out. So she's very kind of, I always remember when she was about five, I went to like the local swimming pool with her and we were getting changed. And I was like, oh, my boobs are so big because I couldn't get them in the bikini top. And she went, Mom, we are all born with the boobs that we're supposed to be born with.
Not me. I'm going to have a chat with your daughter.
So, yeah. No, but I mean, yeah, that's her. She's quite.
Aww. And do you see a lot of yourself in her? Or is she more like your husband?
She's more like me. My husband is like the complete opposite of me. He's like stoic. He had last expressed an emotion in like 1983.
How lovely to be married to a man like that.
Yeah.
You sound like a real yin and a yang.
But totally yin and yang. Like people are a bit like, why are you together?
But imagine he'd also, like imagine you were married to Pete Doherty. Wouldn't work.
That would be terrible. Mm-hmm. That would be, I mean, that would, oh no, we. Oh God, I wouldn't be here right now.
Did you ever date?
No. Oh.
Missed opportunity. Did you date celebs in the journalist scene? Never.
No. I had a few encounters with people that have like since been cancelled.
Oh no. Well, we all hope to end up with a Harry Wilson.
He'll love that.
You know?
He's very sensible.
Yes. And he's a financial journalist.
Yeah, he's very boring.
So does that mean he handles the money at home? You don't have to stress about that kind of stuff?
He's very good at that kind of stuff. Yeah. He's a serious journalist. Like he does investigative undercover stuff.
There's financial investigative undercover stuff.
Yeah, he like exposes corruption.
Does he go to the nail salons and find out why they only take cash? Could he do that for me? Because I don't want to go to the cash point. I just want them to take a bank transfer if they could.
I will get him on that one.
And find out what they're saying about me as well. Does he speak Vietnamese? I need Harry Wilson more than you know.
He's in court today.
Oh.
Like covering the, he exposes like dodgy bankers connected to Jeffrey Epstein and things like that.
Well, he shouldn't be doing that. That's very dangerous.
He also has like exposed some shit on Prince Andrew, which is quite serious.
I'm worried about Harry now.
I don't really understand what he does. So he'll come back and go, and he'll have to go off to like Luxembourg or something. He'll also be so cross with me for saying all of this on a podcast. Like he won't let me put his picture on Instagram. He's like, I'm a serious journalist.
Well, we can take it out if you want. But I feel very privileged to know that about him. So he sounds like really sexy. Why don't you share a bed with him?
Because I like my sleep.
Mm.
Like I think sharing a bed with your husband is overrated. Do you share a bed with your husband?
I do not share a bed with my
husband. Oh, I'm so happy. Why don't you share a bed with him?
I would. I do agree with you. He snores. He does sweat in his sleep sometimes. I prefer to sleep alone. But I would be willing to do it. But we have very small children who still wake through the night. And I sleep in their room like the fucking dog on Peter Pan.
Do you?
I live in the nursery. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that's kind of why we ended up doing it.
Okay.
But we've carried on. So he goes up to the loft.
Yeah.
So like we kind of meet and we kind of start the evening together. And then he'll go, okay, good night then. And off he'll go.
So you watch a little documentary or something together in the marital bed and then.
Yeah. And then he's off to. And it's so much better because I can kind of like have you starfished.
Yes.
In a Super King bed.
I miss that.
But I have friends who, like, I have a friend who she was telling me, you know, she was like, I can't sleep without my husband in the bed, you know, and they have quite a small bed as well. And they're like, and I was like, ooh, no.
Yeah.
So I just want, like, beds are for sleeping.
I know. The oxytocin is overrated. They're like, you have to sleep next to your husband.
I'm like, no, I don't.
And naked. Some of my friends, oh, no, he likes me to sleep naked. I have to sleep naked.
Well, that's just wrong.
And they're getting old and cold as well.
Like, also, like, if my husband said to me, you have to sleep naked next to me, I'd be like...
It's a red flag.
It's a total red flag. It's like Republic of Gilead red flag.
I know.
Flag. And also, I'm worried about your friends and their husbands. I don't think that
my friends have bad husbands.
I think they need to come and have a good chat.
Yeah, but I don't think you realize, it sounds to me like you have a very good husband.
Oh, no, I do have
a do you know that a lot of men are trash? And Harry Wilson sounds like an anomaly.
No, listen, Catherine, men were just consistently fucking trashy to me the whole way through my 20s, well into my 30s. And I loved the trash. The trashier the man, the more I was into that
person. You can fix him.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Or he, you know, like, I just need to get him to actually want me. And then I've solved the world.
Right.
I've solved the problem in my head. But I don't know. I met this nice guy and I was like, he's a bit boring. And I don't know what happened. I mean, I do know he got me pregnant. And
there you go.
That was, and I was like, the universe has stepped in and stopped me from blowing this relationship up. That's basically what happened.
Do you feel like you have a guardian, like an ancestor?
I do, yeah. I do. Maybe Demi. Maybe my boobas are
it
there.
It would be.
Yeah. I do feel, I've always felt like I've always been looked after.
Mm-hmm.
Not just by my parents.
Not by them at all, it sounds like.
I feel like I trust that everything works out okay in the end.
Yeah.
But I also think, I always remember a friend saying to me, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm so lucky I have Harry. And my mum often talks to me, like, she's like, oh, he's, you know, he's so brilliant to put up with you.
That's nice, mom.
I don't know.
And but he's probably very excited by you. You're interesting. You're funny.
He's very excited by me.
That makes him even sexier because he doesn't want one of these 20-year-olds on her phone ignoring the date. He wants a woman who's like layered and vivacious and has lots to say.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, well, yeah. But anyway, but I remember saying, oh, I'm lucky to have him because I was such a toxic mess up. And then I remember a friend saying to me, no, but you chose, you know, like you made that decision to kind of like shrug off the married dickheads.
Good for you. And what do you think excites Harry Wilson about you? I like boobs. Using his full name, your boobs. The boobs that you were like, oh, my boobs are too big.
Yeah, yeah, you know, they were what excites
look what they've done.
Harry Wilson about me.
Great. I know that you seem to be very in tune with what matters in life, like I am. We're very grateful to be here. But do you do anything to combat the visible signs of aging?
Oh, like?
Botox fillers, treatments, tweakments?
No. So I...
Nothing?
No, I don't do nothing. I am obsessed with skincare.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when I got sober, it became because I would just fall into bed with like my makeup still on, not knowing how I'd got there.
You're not supposed to do that.
No, I know. I learned that. But again, it was something I learned when I got sober.
But your skin's beautiful. You're bouncing back from absolutely everything.
Okay. So then, so it became part of my like self-care ritual is my obsession. I became obsessed with Caroline Hirons.
Same.
And I sort of live in my local Space NK. They're like, oh, hi, Bryony. And I love that. So every other night I have my LED mask. Okay. I sit there looking like Jason from...
You sleep alone. It's fine.
Yeah. With my thing on. And I do that. And then I have my retinol. And then the next night I do my acids. I did try Botox once. Because my friends were telling me that I was being a hypocrite. Like, first of all, I found out all my friends were having Botox.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what? I felt like they were all at this party that they hadn't invited me to. And they were like, well, we're not going to tell you because you're briny. And you'll be like, oh, I need to run a marathon to protest against the tyranny of my friends injecting Botox into their faces. And they said, you should try it, you know, instead of being so judgmental. I was like, I've literally not said anything. So I went and got some Botox and it didn't work. Oh, it did work, obviously. It got rid of all of the creases for a bit. But the problem is I couldn't, like, I just didn't look like... I'm very expressive with my face.
You can't emote.
No. So it was really obvious. And also, I don't trust myself with it because I once, just before the pandemic, I got those fake, eyelash extensions.
Yep.
And I thought I looked amazing. I thought I looked so fucking hot. And all I can say is thank God COVID happened and they just had to fall out because everything shut down. Not thank God the beauty industry was like decimated.
Yeah.
Not thank God for that. And not thank
a transfer of wealth.
For COVID, yeah. Obviously. But because I look back at those pictures of me with those eyelashes and I look
like honestly, a doll.
I look terrible. Yeah. I look like I've just walked off the set of Towie, which is like, it's a look, but it's not my kind of look.
Shots fired at Towie.
I don't trust that I have any kind of...
It's called blindness. So someone might say, do I have eyebrow blindness? What's my blindness? This is what the young girls say on TikTok. Do I have blush blindness? Have I got bronzer blindness? You worry that you've Botox identified...
blindness.
Eyelash blindness, and you may also get Botox.
I definitely would. And knowing my addictive personality, I would end up looking like Jocelyn Wildstein.
Me.
Within about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So
that's a healthy outlook, I think.
Yeah.
And I think also being over 40, a lot of women in the know are turning away from a lot of injectables.
Are they?
Yeah, because it starts to just look quite masculine, actually, and pillowy. And they've done MRIs that say it stays in your face. It just migrates. So retinol and SPF?
Of course, yeah.
I mean, maybe that's why you look so young. If you're spending a lot of mornings hungover, you were missing.
I was missing the
UV.
Yeah. I think that's it.
It's genius.
It's certainly not because of my intense smoking and drug habit.
Okay. Well, I think it's time to find out how old you really are, Bryony. Bryony Gordon, we're now joined by Dr. Nicola Conlon. A science woman, a scientist who can now interpret your results for us. Are you ready to find out your biological age? Bryony Gordon, your result is, what's your guess?
88.
26 years old.
Are you fucking kidding me?
18 years younger than your chronological age.
I'm sorry, that is so funny. That is honestly the funniest thing. You're very funny, so I've laughed a lot at your stuff, but that is the funniest thing I've ever heard come out of anyone's mouth. That is surely not.
It's a very good result.
I could probably go and pick up booze and drugs again. I probably had a few more years in me.
I mean, Nicola, what is going on? How can you... How much of this is down to Harry Wilson, would you say?
Oh my God, I'm 26.
Yeah.
I'm going to cry. I think I've already done it, but like aging is a privilege and, you know, I'm lucky. And I'm like, now this has changed my life.
Good. Well, the biggest privilege of age is chronologically aging, but having your health and
I'm
a great
backwards.
Attitude. Mm. Yeah, this is what you've got. You've got the best of both. Nicola, how the fuck did she do this?
Well, first of all, I love the reaction. So, you know, I was sat in the back listening. And when you said, you know, I'm going to be 88 and I feel lucky to be alive. And, you know, you were really, really, truthfully, probably expecting this not to be
26.
Oh, yeah,
no, I was expecting it to be much older. Like, I definitely didn't expect it to be younger. No, I expected it to be older. Like, I thought you were going to say, I thought you might maybe start with like a 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
D.
60.
60.
60 something.
60, yeah. About 26.
But does this ring true? Like, do you have that kind of energy?
I mean, when I was 26, I was like in crack dens.
Already?
I was not. So I probably do have more energy. Like definitely I'm awake for more time than I am.
Okay.
Than I was.
I mean, in all honesty, I think if we did this test when you were actually chronologically 26, I do think we would have got a completely different result. Mm-hmm. It would have almost been like the Bryony before the Bryony, you know, after story. But what it actually shows is that your body has this just amazing capacity to really bounce back from anything. So, you know, even when people feel like they've got to a stage where, you know, they're in a right pickle, they have ruined their health, there's actually huge light at the end of the tunnel that your biological age is reversible. Okay, so your chronological age, you cannot do anything about it. That's just the age according to your birth certificate. But your biological age, that is how old you are on the inside at a cellular level. So when we took your blood sample, we used a test called glycan age. And what that does is it looks at patterns in your blood which reflect how old you are really on the inside. And that is something that is actually can change. And what we know is things like your lifestyle, the way you live your life, have a massive impact. So certainly, I think there probably was a time in the past that that would have been a lot worse. But when I looked at your health questionnaire now, you know, you have a, just looking on paper, you've got a pretty healthy lifestyle. You know, you're doing the exercise, you're doing, have good sleep because you've got no one in the bed.
Good attitude.
Yeah, it's great for biological age.
But Brian is stressed.
Yeah, but I did notice that you said that you do practices a couple of times a week to try and get on top of stress, like meditation or breath work.
I think probably it's really interesting because I'm listening to you. I think it's so funny that my brain sort of still sees me as that slightly chaotic, not slightly, but incredibly chaotic alcoholic addict it's nearly 10 years ago that I stopped drinking. Mm. And actually, like, my life is completely unrecognizable, you know, and I sometimes don't appreciate how much I have managed to change my life around. Yeah. And actually listening to you just talk then, I was like, this is like, it makes me feel a bit weepy because it makes me feel quite safe in a way that I don't often feel. But it also, it does show, you know, like when I've been in the depths of despair about stuff, I feel like this will never change. Like, this can't ever change. You know, I'm always going to feel this way, or this is the end of my life as I know it. And this just shows that, anything is possible. But I'm trying to think of what I was doing the day that you came around to take my blood.
So it wouldn't have been the exact like way that your biological age works, is it's a cumulative effect over several months. So it doesn't matter, like, even on that day, if you'd had a terrible day, you were totally stressed, it wouldn't actually impact what the result is, because this is something that definitely happens over time. So it's something that takes a bit of a while to change. So even when you said that, you know, 10 years, you've been sober pretty much. And alcohol will have had a big impact at that time on biological age. We know that in people that are using excessive alcohol, they tend to have a higher biological age. We know, interestingly, that people that consume excessive alcohol, it obviously increases because it's the ethanol. It's the breaking down the ethanol by the body. It actually gives off a lot of oxidative stress. So that's damaging to our cells. It's causing inflammation. And we know that drives aging. But there's been some studies, and they're kind of conflicting. But some studies say no alcohol, like no level of alcohol is safe.
Yeah.
Other studies have shown, and these were studies looking at biological age, that actually a small amount of moderate drinking is actually good for biological age. So it actually lowers biological age, which is really interesting. And even as a scientist, we're not entirely sure why that is.
Does that depend on the kind of alcohol? Like, is that because wine is fermented, so it counts as a fermented food?
Well, there's some research showing, like, there's certain compounds in wine, like resveratrol, that may be helpful. But to be fair, you'd have to drink an awful lot of wine to get the benefits. So I think the consensus there was actually a study looking at different types of alcohol. And we know that, and it's probably kind of obvious, spirits are worse than wine, which is then worse than beer. And again, that's the ethanol content.
Is cocaine good?
No.
How does cocaine impact inflammation or glycolic age?
Also, isn't it true that cocaine and alcohol together create quite like a deadly compound? I've always heard
Both of these things that your body, you know, they're not great for the body. The body's rapidly trying to get rid of them. So when the body's trying to break down all of these things, it's not doing all the other repair and all the other functions that it should be doing. It's really prioritizing everything towards this. Looking at drugs and biological age, actually, cocaine is one of the only drugs that's actually been studied and to look at its effect actually on how we age. And it's found that excessive cocaine use actually shortens what we call your telomeres. So these are like on the ends of your DNA, you've got these tiny little protective caps and they're a bit like on your shoelaces, the little plastic bits. Mm-hmm. And when these get shorter, it causes your DNA to unwind and basically causes aging. And cocaine actually shortens them.
Right.
So that's one study that's actually shown that a direct link between cocaine and
aging. So are you saying that aging, my biological age, if I hadn't taken cocaine, would be 18?
Well, who knows?
Can you grow those back?
Yes. So you've got something in your body. You've got an enzyme in the body that actually fixes them and lengthens them again. So again, and I think this is what the amazing thing is. Like you said, you feel a lot better now knowing that, like, everything that you've done has actually made a real difference, because for a long time we've always thought that, you know, once the damage is done, and especially as we got older, there's nothing we can do about it. And aging is a privilege, but wouldn't it be amazing to now know that we can also age and gain the wisdom, but then trying, you know, we can actually keep our bodies healthier because it's actually possible. It's mm-hmm. all inside our bodies.
I heard someone, and you'd be able to answer this as a scientist, but I've heard often that thing of how every 7 years all our cells in our body change. And I was thinking, because, yeah, I'll be 8 years sober this year, and I was thinking, if that's true, then I don't have any of the cells that I had when I was still drinking.
Some cells do. So cells in our brains, a lot of those don't change. They're kind of set. Other cells, things like in your liver, your skin, they regenerate, you know, quite often. So I think 7 years is probably like the average across when they look at it across the whole body. But yeah, some regenerate quicker than others. Certainly when you look at things like, you mentioned you've got amazing skin, but we know alcohol, cocaine both have a really negative impact in skin. And there was a study looking at cocaine and skin aging because it causes like a vasodilation. So it stops the blood from actually getting to the skin to be able to nourish the skin cells and turn over. So you often see skin aging, but again, the skin has this amazing ability to bounce back. So,
and will some people, Nicola, just be genetically better at bouncing back?
Yeah. So first of all, some people can be genetically better at dealing with alcohol. You know, like you said, you can only have a couple of glasses and you feel it. Other people are just not like that. You can have a faster or a slower metabolism of alcohol. Even with drugs, the body breaks them down at different rates. So that can be very different in different people. And then also we know there is a genetic element to aging. Certainly lifestyle is the biggest part. It's estimated about 80% is your lifestyle, which is why I think if we tested 26-year-old Bryony, it would have been very different.
But 44.
Yeah, that's the bit. You know, that's the bit that's reversible. So, you know, we know that it's with the right aids, you really can, you know, all hope is not lost.
And is the body stressed by excessive fluctuations in weight?
Yeah, so weight is an interesting one. So we know that carrying excess body fat does have an inflammatory effect on the body. So fat cells do give off inflammation, and we know inflammation drives the aging process. So studies looking at fat and biological age show if you have a higher percentage body fat, generally your biological age will be higher. And that if you do lose some body fat, it goes down.
Right.
Now, the really interesting bit is, and again, this is like everyone is an individual, you know, everyone as well as genetically has different body sizes and, you know, not only their body size, but how they respond to foods and how they respond to different diets. And a really interesting study showed that it doesn't matter what type of diet or what type of food you are eating. It doesn't impact biological age. It's actually just reducing the amount of body fat. So it doesn't matter whether you're doing high carb, low carb, everyone, you know, obsessed with different types of diet, but just even reducing body fat by a small amount can actually positively impact biological age.
Are you doing any secret tricks to stay young, Bryony? Do you take any medication that we need to know about?
I take HRT.
And what's HRT for people who don't know?
Like hormone replacement therapy. I started experiencing menopause quite early. That was the other thing. I started to get I have had obsessive compulsive disorder since I was a child, but kind of largely under control. Mm. And a couple of years ago, it came back terribly. Mm. I couldn't leave the house. And someone said, oh, you thought you might be perimenopausal. And I sort of rolled my eyes in that. I'm too young. And they said, no, you could be, you know, ask your mum. So I called my mum up and I was like, mum, what age did you go through menopause? And she was like, how dare you? I never went through menopause. I was like, what? You're still having periods and you're set. And she was like, shut up. And she like put the phone down, basically. Okay. And then a couple of days later, when she'd obviously recovered from the shock of being asked about this, she called me and she was like, this menopause of which you speak. She was like, I had your brother at 40 and then never had a period again. And your grandmother went through it at 42. And I was like, oh, that would have been useful. So I went on HRT. I've been on it for a couple of years, estrogen, obviously progesterone. And I also started something I started last year, which is made a huge difference to my body, is testosterone.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. So interesting that you mention this. So we know that HRT is actually very effective in lowering biological age in women that have undergone perimenopausal or menopausal changes. We do know that shifts in hormone levels can drive biological age up, and that's completely reversible with HRT. Mm. So, you know, that could also be playing a role in the biological age result that you've got. It's
and I love that we talk about it now too, because the mental impact of perimenopause on so many women my age, because their mothers are shrouded in shame about it, they don't talk about it. These women are like, am I losing my mind? Do I hate my husband? Yeah. No, you need HRT.
Yeah, because it was really, for me, all of the symptoms were mental. Mm. And, you know, and it was when I came to understand how powerful hormones had been affecting my mental health. Because when I first had an episode of obsessive compulsive disorder, I was 11. Uh-huh. You know, and when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was so unwell. And as soon as I gave birth, it was like this cloud lifted. And we sort of worked out, and it was only by going on HRT and then taking the progesterone. So the estrogen made me feel amazing. The progesterone made me feel suicidal. And we discovered that I was sort of progesterone intolerant and probably suffering from PMDD kind of, but it you know, it's been revelatory and enabled me to sort of look up, you know, to really understand my body. Yeah. And I think it's quite nuts that it should take until you're in your 40s that starts to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I do look after myself, but I don't have any, like I take HRT, I take antidepressants because I have since I was 17. Mm-hmm. And then I take vitamin D and omega-3.
It's interesting. So vitamin D and omega-3 are also two dietary supplements that have also had evidence to show they reverse biological age. So without knowing it, you're actually kind of choosing out the right things that are really benefiting your cells inside.
Isn't vitamin D, like it's that important?
It's extremely important in our bodies. And hormones are, you know, often associated, especially the sex hormones, that people think, oh, they're just for fertility, you know. That's got nothing to do with the rest of our bodies. But actually, every cell in your body pretty much has an estrogen receptor. Wow. So you can imagine the situation when your estrogen suddenly goes down, then all of those cells are sitting there going, well, where's my estrogen? Like, now I can't do these functions. So it's amazing that we're now learning more about how this impacts our age, especially in women. We know women can age worse than men, probably because of the hormone effect.
And people have been studying women for literally hours.
Yeah, this is a huge problem in clinical trials. Yeah.
It's really great as a science woman. It's good to have you here to know all of this, Nicola.
Thank you. We will keep pushing to get the women in clinical trials because we're not as complicated as they think.
Nicola, were you shocked to see results like this based on the questionnaire from Ryan E?
Not based on the questionnaire, because the questionnaire shows somebody that lives a balanced life.
No.
Based on the discussion that has just happened, I mean, in a way, no, because from this, all of the studies I've done, I've really been shown how flexible biological age is. even the scientists for a long time, we didn't really think that aging was something that you could reverse. It was kind of once the clock had started, that was it. But now more and more evidence is coming out to show this is something with lifestyle changes that you can really impact. So I'm not as surprised as I probably would have been several years ago. But now, knowing what I know now, this is an excellent example of how it's reversible.
Can I ask about the other guests on this show and what their average biological age has been? Well, is this good?
Mine's 77. We've had some young guests who have young biological ages, but they're younger than you and their biological age is around yours. We've had a lot of people be older than their biological age. I think yours is very impressive, Bryony.
Yeah.
I'm coming away from today with some very bad life lessons. The message is, cane it. Do what you want. Live fast.
Eat what you want.
Eat what you want.
Treat your body like an amusement park.
And then, once you meet a Harry Wilson, put the brakes on and it'll all be fine.
I can't wait to tell Harry Wilson what my biological age is.
He's going to be more excited than ever.
I think he's going to get quite competitive. Like, he'll want to find out his biological age and beat mine. That's what he's like.
How beatable is this biological age? I'd say not very.
No, I think that's a really good result.
You can keep that.
I felt like you were handing me an Oscar. And I feel some people in Hollywood would kill for that. Do you know what? That is a really nice thing to hear. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good thing to show all the haters whenever they send me an email or a DM on Instagram telling me that they're concerned about my joints. I'll just go, fuck off. I have the body of a 26-year-old.
Will this change anything about your life?
It tells you everything you need to know about the nuts of my, the mental thing of my brain, that I thought, maybe I could have a cigarette. Maybe I could have a fag tonight.
Celebratory fag.
I do remember, so I am going to say something. Years ago, when I was starting out as a journalist, I got sent to trial something where they kind of like tested your, you know, they did a kind of like testing your lifestyle. And I answered the questionnaire and they were like, shit. And then they came back and they were like, you have the lungs of a newborn lamb or something. Ooh. Or, you know, like they were like, you know, you're really healthy. And I was like, brilliant. I can go and I can like carry on drinking and smoking. And they were like, no, we wouldn't advise that. And I was like,
I think you can have a fag tonight, just don't have one tomorrow.
No, I won't have
that.
No,
the message.
But that's I couldn't do that. I would have a fag tonight and then I would take up smoking again. So I'm just going to carry on as I am.
Well,
and
just to set the record straight, smoking is worse on a woman's biological age than a man's biological age.
Why?
Sorry.
Is that just because
it's phallic?
What we see is that it doubles the biological age of a woman, but only 1.5 times increases in a man. We don't know why.
I think the message of this is, if anyone is listening, watching, whatever you do, it is you do with podcasts nowadays, and they suspect they have a drinking problem and they hate themselves and they're smoking and they think, I don't know how to get out of this. Mm-hmm. I am proof that you can get out of it, babes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Not just get out, but get out and get up and be better than ever and be 26 at 44.
Wow.
I've got nothing to come back from. I started a nerd. I continue to be a nerd, straight edge, still biologically old as hell. I missed out.
Is this...
Binding legally? Yes.
Is this test legit?
Yeah, this
or
test
is just made up.
No, this, yeah, we just plucked a number like a lucky dip lottery. No, it's legit. So this is, it's literally measuring, this one particular one. So there are many different types of biological age tests. This one, glycan age, looks at levels of inflammatory markers in the blood. We know inflammation's really linked with the aging process. We know there are other ways to measure it. So you can look at something called epigenetics, which is which genes are switched on and off. And the pattern of genes that are switched on when you're young is very different to the pattern that's switched on when you're old. So we can measure measure this pattern. So there are multiple different ways to measure it, but this one has a lot of great science behind it as well.
I obviously think it's shit. I'd fail the DNA one too.
I'm speechless.
For the first time
in my life.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on What's My Age Again, and I'm glad that you got such a positive result. I feel that you are an inspiration, a joy, a delight, a babe, and I think that you keep changing lives with your story and with your message, and even with this result.
And I'll be doing it for even longer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks to Bryony Gordon for joining on What's My Age Again. If you want more of Bryony, you can hear her on her podcast, The Life of Bryony. Read her column in the Daily Mail or read one of her many books, including Mad Girl, Mad Woman, and The Wrong Knickers. Relatable. Thanks so much for joining us on What's My Age Again. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.